You ready? You ready? Come on, do it.
Huh? Hold on, give me a second.
What are you doing?
Hi everyone, and hope you are all doing very well. Guys.
Man, we love that guy.
He's solid, isn't he?
That guy is awesome.
What a good awesome. Sport. What a good sport.
So, hello, everybody. I hope you are all doing very well. This is episode number 38. More banter and... Oh, what is it called?
It's More Kraken.
More Kraken. More Kraken. People are sick of this Kraken shit.
And the good old days.
And the good old days. Yeah.
Yeah. What is the good old days? What does that mean?
I don't know. You wanted to talk about... you wanted to do an episode that would kind of seem redundant, right?
Yes.
What was the whole deal?
So, one of our listeners, Eric, had suggested a topic of talking about what you and I did to prepare for various competitions. And as I was writing the notes, I was like, man, this really lines up with the Old Man 3D episode as far as practicing and bettering your flying.
Yeah.
So, instead of making a whole... episode around that, what we're going to do is talk about the Kraken, because Bert just got his Kraken, so we're going to cover that for a little bit. And then Bert and I are going to talk about back in the day when we were traveling and competing and doing all that. What was our practice schedule or regimen like? What do we do? What kind of time do we put in? How do we prepare? Stuff like that.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about... You didn't go through the life experience of like having the bug and going flying every day and like getting better. Because you... You don't have any memory recollection of that. You were like five.
All of my memories are around helis. That's all I have.
Yeah, like
that's all
you
known.
Remember flying helis the same way you remember learning how to walk or learning how to speak or there's nothing exciting. Sorry. Yeah.
Wait, you remember how to walk? You remember learning to walk?
No.
Yeah, I was going to say there's no way. But like my oldest memories are also
what?
No, you do not remember how I learned to walk. Yeah. No. But all of my oldest memories that I have stored in deep inside my brain are all surrounded around flying.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like
it's all I know.
It's like the first time you learn to say mama, mama.
Yeah.
And like your mom is like, oh, he said mama. Like you remember that? Like
yeah, of course not.
Yeah, the first time you hovered and your dad was that's my boy.
Yeah, I remember that.
You don't remember. Bullshit.
Absolutely.
No way.
Yeah.
Do you really?
Yeah.
So you were too old at that point then.
Learning forward figure eights. Learning inverted flying, doing my first auto, remember all that.
Anyway, so your idea was, or the suggestion was, how do we get ready for competition?
How do we prepare ourselves for various competitions?
And how did we get to be where we're at?
Correct.
Flying-wise.
Correct.
Okay. So we thought we just, instead of like going into detail with that, because like you said, Kyle, it's... being redundant.
Yeah,
we've discussed it many times. But we will share some stories about the good old days and and what we used to do or we did back or I did back in the day. Because you're still kind of doing it. You have to get ready for Global 3D. But what I did and some of the things you did get to where you're at, like what took you there?
Yeah.
Like how did you prepare for it?
Yeah.
But before we get to that, let's talk about...
what we've been up to.
Yeah, as usual, yeah.
The exciting part of the podcast. Yeah. What have we been up to? You go first this time.
Really?
Uh-huh.
What the hell? I've done a lot, actually.
Have you?
I had a solid packed weekend. I hope Enrico doesn't listen to this podcast. I received a Kraken, beautiful helicopter Italian design, in the box last Thursday. First of all, it was delayed. It was supposed to get here Wednesday, but it did not arrive till Thursday. And it arrived late Thursday. No big deal. One day. No big deal. But, yeah, it's very critical because we needed to send feedback very, very fast, very quickly. Very important, right away, please. And it arrived Thursday, and it was kind of late in the day, and we had a really busy day. So Friday... after I did my morning stuff, like right around 9, 10 o'clock, when I was kind of caught up with the essentials of the day, then I went to my shit and I started building this thing.
Uh-huh.
Right? Pretty freaking sick badass machine, let me say. I'm impressed. Yeah.
Really? You like it?
Yeah, I think it's cool. It's very cool.
Really?
It is refreshing for me, and I'm sure you share this experience, although you had a little hiatus for a few months where you flew a different brand.
Mm. Plastic Fantastic.
Yeah. And it didn't last very long. But for me, I haven't built anything that's not a goblin since... Jesus, man. Like, I think my last build non-goblin was like late 2011. No. Summer of 2011 when I was building my Outrage helicopters.
Oh.
Summer to fall of 2011.
You can't really compare that, though, because that would have been either a 50 or a 90 size nitro.
Correct.
Last time you built a 700 electric probably would have been T-Rex 700 back in 2010? 2010.
Actually, because that's what you flew. You're right. Because Outrage didn't have a 90 electric, did it? Mm-hmm. No.
Nope.
I did build a, was it the Fusion 50, was it called? Whatever it was called. It was like a 600
the disaster class 50?
Electric. Yeah. No, that thing was solid.
That one was good?
The electric one. The electric one. That was pretty good.
Okay.
But that was like, that was the fall of, so you're right. The last time I built a 700 class electric helicopter was early 2011.
Mm-hmm. T-Rex 700.
Something other than a goblin. Yep. Yes. My last T-Rex 700, which is the one that I flew in Switzerland, mm-hmm. that one year at the Lodrino at the Alpine Heli Smackdown, which was in the fall of 11, which is when I met Stefano and Enrico. And, you know, I flew the goblin with T-Rex at that field outside the event. Mm-hmm. So... don't want to spend too much on this topic, time on this topic. But what I'm saying is building a goblin, once you've built 2, 3, 4, 8, 10 goblins, 15, 25 goblins, they're all the same.
It's all the same.
You don't need a manual. You don't need anything. But this thing was...
it's different.
It was different. I need to read. I need to, not to mention I had to like contribute to improving the manual and stuff. But mm-hmm. like it's cool to just... open a box and be like lost. I enjoy that. That was awesome. It was like, I don't know what to do.
You didn't know what the first step was. You didn't know anything.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. That was fun. Mm-hmm. So I spent all day Friday building and the weekend, man, I had to go ride. I explained this before. This is the only time of the year when I get to ride my bike because then it gets nasty in the summer.
Yeah, like give it 2 weeks and you're done.
My friends up north don't understand because they don't live in Florida. It gets nasty mm-hmm. here. And then it's no way.
Right.
You don't want to ride when it's raining. You can go fly when it rains because in between showers, you go down and under the awning at the field, you wait for a shower, you go back out, you fly. Oh, that cloud might dump rain. Okay. You know, but when you're riding a bike... it's a different story. It's not enjoyable when you're 150, 200 miles away from home.
Yeah.
So I went and I rode Saturday and Sunday. That was a lot of fun. Especially Saturday was a nice, nice ride. Long ride all around Florida. It was mm-hmm. great. Bunch of people. I think ten bikes. I forgot.
Wow.
And then, and it was great. And my buddy Ernie got ticketed because he parked. Huh? Yeah, he parked in the... No parking zone, although it was not marked. He still got a ticket.
No way.
Can you believe that shit?
That sucks.
And let's see. And then, first thing Monday, mm-hmm. finally, mm-hmm. servos arrived.
Finally?
Yeah. Can you believe that?
No.
Been out of stock. Finally, servos arrived. They were in stock. I was able to... I gave the last set of usable servos to the cooks. For their Kraken, right? Mm-hmm. I did the right thing. Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. So, I didn't have servos.
No need.
And they were a little delayed because they were on some sort of vacation in Taiwan at the factory. They always do these vacations all the time. So, my servos arrived Monday. I put them in the Kraken, and I got to fly Monday afternoon. Mm-hmm. And it was good.
You like it?
It was nice. It was awesome. Yes.
Yeah.
So what?
Elaborate.
It was a good flying machine. It's awesome. I enjoyed it. Yes. Mm. So flew it Monday afternoon. Flew it Tuesday afternoon. Gonna fly it Wednesday afternoon. I got almost 30 flights already. Can you believe that?
I cannot. That's insane. That crazy, is a lot of flights.
A lot of flights.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh? Mm-hmm. That's good.
Yeah.
And you like
I would have flown it Sunday, but Sunday, when we got back from our Sunday ride, I didn't have the servos. I couldn't finish it.
Right.
So instead, I did my usual Sunday ritual. By the way, Frank Moradillos, and I flew my Nitro in the backyard Sunday afternoon.
Did you?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah, two flights.
two flights.
Yeah.
All good.
Yeah. I was lucky enough. I had one receiver pack that had enough voltage.
Yeah.
It was 7.9 or so.
No,
it was
no
safe
issues.
Safe for two flights.
No issues.
No, it's perfect.
Yeah. Really? How'd the engine run?
The engine's running perfect.
Yeah.
I didn't have any servo failures. I didn't have any V-bar failures. Everything was perfect.
Really?
Yeah. Run perfect.
Nice.
No failures, no problems. Everything was good.
Interesting.
Anyway, your turn. What is wrong? Why is it that nobody believe that I fly my Nitro Sunday evenings at home? Why?
I wonder. I have no idea why.
It's a perfect place to fly the Nitro, isn't it? You don't have to put it back in your car, all dirty and nasty. You just like, you fly, you take it back to the shed, you hang it on the wall, and it's good to go till next Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to carry the fuel, the starter, the glow igniter, the freaking extra glow plugs. You have everything here. Everything's ready to go. Something goes wrong, you fix it, you fly it again.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to transport all that crap in your car.
Very easy, very simple. Anyway. But,
yeah.
What have I been up to? Not a lot. After the spring bash, my girlfriend Olivia stayed down here. So she spent a week and a half here hanging out. She just went home yesterday. But it was cool to hang out with her, spend some time. Just the normal stuff.
What'd you do?
Huh?
You took her to the field. No
Took her
way.
To the field, yeah. She
Why?
Went flying with me. Because she loves it.
Lame.
She loves flying.
No, she doesn't. She was
flying.
Bored to death.
No, she no loves way. Flying. Yeah, we all went to the field. She
Uncle
hung
Ron,
out.
She was bored to death.
She's a good sport. She's a good sport.
She is, but she didn't deserve that. No need.
But it was good to hang out with her, have some time outside, and relax a little bit. So it's cool. I really didn't do as much. You were much more active than I were, for sure. She and I went shopping. That's about it.
Yeah, you went to St. Augustine.
Mm-hmm. Yep, went up to St. Augustine.
Long trip.
Mm-hmm. An hour and a half. Not bad.
Yeah, each
you
way.
Went. So?
Yeah.
Compared to your bike ride, that's nothing.
I guess.
No, very simple. Very simple time. Just hanging out, relaxing, working on helis, doing a little bit of flying of some stuff. And that's
nice.
About it. Yeah.
That's it?
Mm-hmm.
That's all you have to say?
Nah, I had a very boring week.
No way.
Yeah. Simple.
Okay. What about this coming weekend? What are you going to do?
Fly.
Really?
Practice.
Both days.
Huh?
Both days.
Yeah. I have to. I have a lot of practice to do for Global 3D coming up.
For a change this weekend, I will go fly. Can you believe that?
Weird, huh?
Yeah.
Both days?
I'm going to go fly. No, I'm going to fly Saturday.
Okay, whatever.
What do you mean? I'm going to Torches Saturday. I'm going to fly.
Not very
Sunday,
good.
I'm going to go ride again.
Why?
Because I'm going to go to this place called the Beaver Bar. I'm telling you.
Hmm?
Yeah. I have the best cocktails.
Where?
Daytona Beach.
The sure Beaver right. Bar.
The Beaver Bar.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sounds like something else to me. I don't know.
It is called a Beaver Bar. Anyway,
well, cool.
So the Kraken. Let's wrap up this part of the podcast.
Yeah,
the Kraken. Very impressed once again with the build. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to do build video. Some people have asked for it. We've discussed it in the past. I said it wasn't really necessary for me to do it. I said, if you are building a 700 class machine, you should be to the point where you really don't need the assistance of a build video. That's the way I see it.
Hmm.
With that said, a lot of people came back and said, well, you can't see it that way. It would help us with tips and tricks and blah, 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 blah. And I honestly, if I could do a build video, I would do it. But I couldn't have done it with that particular helicopter.
Well, right? I don't know if...
It's a pre-production.
Yeah. I don't know if everyone understands what goes into both sides of it. So, I understand their side of the build video. It's cool. Like, you know, there's people out there who aren't, A, very good at building, or B, like it. So, if they want to see how the kit goes together before buying it. Okay.
And it's
a good reason.
And it's also easy. It's much easier for people to watch and follow than it is to read, and you know what I mean? Yeah.
Sure. But the other side, your side, is it goes from a 3-hour build to a 10-hour build with the camera, changing the angles, annotating, editing, all that stuff. It just changes everything. And like you mentioned, it's a pre-production build.
But it's, but my point is it's not that I didn't want to go through all that, because I've done it before. I did it with the 500. I did it with the Fireball. Is the fact that I couldn't have done it. I shouldn't have done it, and I couldn't have done it, and I would have never done it with that particular kit.
Right.
Because even though that is kind of a production kit, it's really not.
It's really not.
It was missing the manual. I mean, we had access to a rough draft of the manual that we were able to download privately online, but it was missing the printed manual. It was there were some parts that we were aware were missing in the box that we had to get from other sources. Like, it wasn't the right kit to go after to do a built video, because it would have been very misleading and
very
confusing.
Inaccurate. Yeah.
And if I do get a true production kit on batch 2 or 3, unfortunately, it's not going to be anytime soon because I already have one, so I don't really need a number 2. But if I do get a number 2, like, at some point in the future, then I will consider doing the build. But I will not really just... I can't promise anything at this point, like in terms of like having something done really quick.
Right.
Now, you are going to get another kit sooner than later, right?
Maybe.
So,
probably not.
If and when you will. And when you get that kit, that'll probably be a production kit.
It should be.
Because technically, production kits will be shipping out, not to customers, but shipping to distributors as early as next week.
Correct.
So, you will more than likely have a production kit. And if and when you do, we can use your build, not to do a video, but we can use your build to make a video where we make reference to certain parts of the build and give people tips and tricks about like the most critical parts of the build, right?
Yeah, just help people along.
Because that was my idea. My idea was not to do like a 7-hour long build video like I did with the Fireball and the 500 and all that. It was more like, let's do a 10 to 15 minute video where we like talk about things that were crucial, critical, and important, where like somebody might have a doubt. They might be doubtful. Like, does this really go this way? Because you know how you look at the manual and sometimes you're like, is this really how that goes? Like, and you're like, yeah, this is how it goes for this reason. This is how you do it. And then you just show like a 30-second clip for that particular section. And then you do that times 5 or times 10 or whatever little segments of areas within the build that where people might have questions or doubts or concerns, we can address that, right? But we don't need a 2, 3, 4, 5 hour long build video.
Yeah. We'll just cover the essentials, things that people might miss or things that might be hard to understand at first, and just kind of like a tips and tricks video.
Yeah.
Outside of the build, what do you think? Does it fly good, or are you kind of meh?
So, I'm still tweaking, man. It's different. I talked to one of our customers yesterday on the phone. He called, and normally you answer, but I answered. And he asked me how I liked it, and I said, I love it. I think it's really cool. He's like, is it different? I'm like, yeah. Well, how different is it? I'm like, I can't explain it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just different.
It's
not necessarily the feel. The feel is different, but it's the entire experience, right? Like, the visual is different, right? Yeah, the sound is different. So, like, visual sound, that alone is like, okay, different. Mm-hmm. Just different.
Yeah.
Right?
I can't really explain it. It's just different.
Yeah, the experience is just altogether a different experience. But we have a handful left, I think. 3 or 5, I don't know.
Not many, that's for sure.
Minus cancellations. I think some of our dealers mentioned they still have some. I think Shannon Turner, last time I spoke with him, said he had a few. And Heli Direct, I think they have a bunch. And Jason Bell said he had a handful left. So support our dealers if you want a Kraken.
Yep.
Get it from them as well. As we get cancellations, which I'm sure we might get some.
Perhaps.
We had a guy from Eastern Europe order one, and he canceled because the shipping was too expensive.
Right.
So, you know, that frees up one or two here and there. And so you might be able to still get one if you want one. But I am pretty sure that before release, they will be gone.
That's what it's looking like. They're disappearing quick.
Yeah.
Very quick.
And it's not a big deal. I mean, if you guys don't want to get on board right now because you're afraid, or not necessarily afraid, but you have doubts as to, you know, how this thing's going to turn out, and you'd rather wait for batch number two or three, that's fine. But if you're thinking about, like, getting one right now, batch number one, you should do it. Like, you should just do it now. Don't wait. Because you're going to miss out.
Right. If you really want one, do whatever you can to get on a list somewhere. Like we said, some of our dealers are still in stock on them right now. So just kind of take a look around. Highly Direct has some, like Bird said, as well as A-Main. So if you are interested in a Kraken and you do not want to wait, definitely look around at other dealers.
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
Absolutely.
Yep.
So.
Huh.
Huh. Some people also asked, you know, I've seen some posts here and there, and like where people say, well, I'm not going to buy it until, you know, is there anybody offering deals? Is there anybody giving a discount? Well, like, listen, guys, there's no discount on the Kraken right now. It's in high demand. There are less helicopters being produced than helicopters. There's less supply than demand. There are more people wanting them than helicopters being produced.
Correct.
I know for a fact that we could have gotten, you know, time and a half the number of kits that we order from SAB, if SAB would have been able to supply them, and we could have sold them, but we didn't. So I know that there's more demand than supply. So with that said, there's no discounts. Not to mention, SAB does not allow discounts on brand new kits. Once things stabilize, demand goes down, supply goes up, like 3-6 months into it, then yeah, you might be able to get one of those usual coupon deals where you save like, you know, 5-10%, whatever, you know, a few dollars here or there. But for now, there's just no special deals. There's no special eBay things. Nothing. It's just just pay $1,096. And let me tell you, I think it's worth every penny. I really do. I mean, just the transmission, right? Don't you agree?
The main transmission.
The main transmission.
Yeah.
I think that alone is cool as hell. Like,
it's sweet.
You can tell there's a lot of labor that goes behind. Like, it's not just the manufacturing, but they put that thing together at the factory. Mm-hmm. That takes time.
Comes built. Done.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you pull it out of the foam piece, and the main steel gears inside that housing are already assembled and greased and ready to go, and you just move on to putting the servo mounts onto that piece. So that takes out some of the work, and actually kind of the annoying work, honestly, because if you had to grease those gears, imagine A, putting them onto the main shaft, tightening the screws, and then packing that thing full of grease. Your hands are going to get nasty. Your workbench is going to get nasty. So all that hard work and just the annoying work is taken out of the equation for you, which is pretty sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty sweet. So, and it's just a nice build overall. I have not built one yet, but I looked over your shoulder as you were looking at yours. I came in and out of the shed when work freed up and kind of checked out how it was going, and it looked clean, looked simple, looked pretty easy to put together. The manual makes sense. The manual is in typical Goblin fashion, very easy to follow. They also put in some nice tips about how to run your wires, how to mount your servo geometry. Like, there's just a lot of things outside of building the actual airframe that SAB offers.
Yeah, I agree.
They give you all the motor and gear ratio combinations, what ESCs they recommend, what head speeds they recommend, what pitch range they recommend. So it's just a very well-developed and very well-rounded manual, I would say.
I totally agree. Agree. Some grammatical errors. Man, can you believe, like, you can proofread that manual 100 times, and you will miss some mistakes 100 times.
I did it. I read the first one, sent some feedback, second time, more feedback, third time, more feedback. I'm sure there's probably a weird
pronunciation. I mean, back in the day when I used to do that kind of stuff too for SAB, it was like I remember missing. Like, I could read the same error 10 times in a row and still miss it.
Absolutely.
Because it gets so repetitive. You need many different people reading and contributing.
Yeah.
One, two persons isn't really not enough.
No,
not
it's enough. Tough. It's very tough. But yeah. The manual, by the time it's printed, the kids should be...
Hopefully.
Yeah. Maybe some weird spellings here and there. So if you hear some weird English phrases, it's all fine. As far as the important parts of how the kit goes together, all that is correct. So the important parts are correct. You just might see some weird phrases thrown in there, various spots, but it is what it is. But yeah. So Bert has like 30 something flights on his now with the Bert Kraken combo. The Bert Kraken combo. If you, any of you are hearing that and have no idea what that means, Bert and I put up some packages on bkhobbies.com of what we recommend and what we use inside of our Krakens. So Bert's is the BK Servo DS7002 cyclic servos and then 7006 tail servo, an Xnova XTS 4525 530 kV motor, and a Hobby Wing ESC.
Yeah, I'm flying the 4525 530 Lightning now.
You are.
And that's only because, well, I have both. But here's the thing. The difference is technically money. And a little bit of efficiency, maybe?
Negligible. Negligible difference.
But some people want, like, the top of the line, whatever Xnova has to offer, right?
Yeah, that's fine.
So, like, yesterday, in the video I just posted last night, mm-hmm. which is, we did it, what, yesterday, day before. Mm-hmm. That's a 4525 530 XTS. Mm-hmm. Today I'm going to fly a 4525 530 Lightning.
Okay.
Just to try and compare, right? And I'll report next week.
Get the direct comparison.
Yeah, but I honestly think the difference is money and maybe a little bit of efficiency. But like power, I think power is the same.
It's about the same. Based on what I've seen, it's about the same. I'd be curious to see what you notice today when we go to the field after this. But yeah, if you guys are interested in what Bert and I are running, check out BK Hobbies. We have the Kraken electronic combos up on the website. My personal Kraken combo is the Kyle Stacey Edition BK Servos, obviously. A Lightning 4525 530 kV motor, and then the Hobby Wing ESC. And for those of you out there that want the motor and the servos but not ESC, we offer that as well. Because I know that there's some people out there who want to use either Contronic or Scorpion and get some telemetry feedback to their V-bar. So we do offer the packages without ESC if you
want to
use something else.
Yeah. You can do it with ESC or without ESC.
Yep.
And this is the time to buy because I think we're slowly selling out, right? Mm-hmm. We have a huge shipment coming of Xnova motors, mm-hmm. Hobby Wing ESCs. They shipped to us today. Mm-hmm. Servos have been arriving. We had a shipment a couple days ago. We have a shipment next week. Mm-hmm. So we'll have everything and plenty of time for the release. So don't be afraid if you see it not in stock or whatever.
Right.
If it's any of these four packages, mm-hmm. We assure you we're going to have it.
Yep.
Before the Kraken gets here, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
And if you order separately, no big deal. It'll ship to you separately. It's not a big deal. We offer free shipping anyway. And if we get that package, if we get servo ESCs and motor, which is 100% guaranteed to get here before the Kraken, we will ship it to you, and it'll show up at your door before your own Kraken ships.
Yeah.
So you'll be all good to go, and you know, you'll have everything you need.
Ready to party.
Yeah.
Ready to party.
So anyway, let's get on to part two.
Part two.
Oh, you want to talk about Coat Race?
So, last week we did a little Coat Race thing. Instead of giving out a discount coupon code, what we did is we asked you guys to print out the BK Hobbies logo, tape it up somewhere in public, and the first 10 people to do that we'll get a free Goblin 280 carry bag. And all you have to do is pay shipping, but the bag itself is free. So the first 10 people to do that will get a free carry bag, and the deadline is this weekend. April 20th is the deadline. We have a handful of people who have already done it. If you've done it, you might be on the list. You might not. We've been getting some entries, so there might still be a few spots. Maybe not. So post up your logos. Post up your pictures. Tag the BK Official, the Facebook page. So we can find it. And next week's podcast, we'll announce the winners. Like I said, 10 people will win a Goblin 280 carry bag. Pretty cool. Weekend deadline.
Nice.
Yep.
Very cool.
Yep.
Oh, well. So, what about, do we have any codes?
No? Do it later.
Later?
Yeah.
Why?
Element of surprise.
Nah, do it now. You got.
Okay.
We play the jingle. You got to do it.
We have two coupon codes.
They're only 10%. 10% off.
10% off the Goblin 700 Thunderspore Drake and the Goblin 700 Havoc, the three-blade kit. Two codes. The first
700
one.
Drake.
Yeah.
Which is the two-blade orange, green, orange, matte.
Green, orange.
orange, matte, orange.
Yeah.
matte orange like the Kraken color. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh. And then the Havoc, which is a three blade, right?
Yellow. Okay. Three blade Yellow. Matte. Yes.
Cool.
Two codes. First one, BKRC567G1. BKRC567G1. What's the second one?
Huh?
You got the second one? You want me to?
No, you didn't give it to me.
Okay. BKRC298X5. BKRC298X-ray 5. That's two codes. 10% off.
10%
the Goblin
off.
Drake Edition. Nice. And the Goblin Havoc Edition. That's this week's code race. So go use the codes. Don't assume that they're to use. Give them a shot, because a lot of people would say, like, oh, I missed out on it. Well, no, you didn't. Their codes are still active. So give it a shot. See if you can get yourself a Drake or a Havoc Edition. Save yourself some money as well. But
nice.
Moving on, we're going to talk about the good old days of competition schedules and practice regimens.
So what do you want to talk about? What do I want to talk about?
Huh? What did you do to get ready for XFC and all the competitions you competed in?
What did I do?
Yeah, how'd you prepare?
Oh boy. I don't want to talk about that yet. I want to talk about how excited I was when I started flying and how much I used to fly. Ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Yeah.
I would fly every day. Every day. Every day. Every day.
No, you wouldn't.
Many flights a day.
Yeah, okay.
Every day.
No.
So, like, I lived in a subdivision, and on the way out of my subdivision, there was a roundabout. It was a huge, huge roundabout. Like, let me guess. Probably about 50 yards, right, mm-hmm. in diameter. Pretty mm-hmm. big. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a big roundabout. Mm-hmm. It was all grass, and it was surrounded by trees. Like, the edge of the roundabout was all trees. I would fly there every day.
No.
Yeah. I was just going there, because it was like just walking distance from my house. I wouldn't fly anything big, but I had that Voyager. Yeah, the Voyager. Badass freaking helicopter.
Okay.
Which used to swing 420 millimeter blades.
That's a tiny little thing.
Wooden blades. Oh. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
They were covered in monocoque or whatever.
Terrifying.
No, it was beautiful. I would fly that thing there every day. Every day.
Okay.
I would go there and fly.
And you would practice competitions with that?
What? No, this is early in the day. This is early in my flying thing, dude.
So you
didn't. I'm not talking about competitions.
You
yet.
Didn't compete with
talking
it.
Talking about. No. Okay. What the fuck would compete? Would compete with a plastic. No. This is early in my flying career, per se.
Okay.
Career. Call okay. it career.
Okay.
And this thing helped me. I learned to do four flight loops, rolls, auto rotations with this little piece of junk thing, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So after about a couple months of doing this, I bought a Raptor 50. Yeah.
Yeah, buddy.
I got, to Mikado's defense, I got a Logo 10, but the thing sucked.
What? I love that thing.
It was nice, but too sophisticated, too German for me. You know,
German?
It was too German. It was too German for me. So, I had it, and I still flew it, but it wasn't. I never went to the Logo 10 as. I never saw the Logo 10 as like a practice machine.
Right.
So, like, okay. So, to recap, when I started flying, I had a Hummingbird. We discussed this in a previous mm-hmm. podcast. Mm-hmm. Piece of junk, fixed pitch. Learned to hover it in my garage. And once I learned to hover that thing, and I did very basic forward fly with it, and I went from that to that Voyager, JR Voyager, 420 millimeter blades. I don't remember what batteries. They were NICATs. Mm-hmm. It was the equivalent to, like, I don't remember, man. It could have been like, could have also been like 10 cells or 8 cells. I can't remember. But then I bought a Logo 10, but the thing was too nice. It was too German. So I didn't want to use it as a practice machine. So I flew it, and I flew it on occasion, but it wasn't like go to practice, crash, repair, yeah. Crash, repair. Graves RC, my local hobby shop, had the parts for the Voyager. So if I crashed the Voyager, I could get parts and fix it. It wasn't cheap, but it was still doable.
Yeah.
Logo was harder to get the parts, you know, back in those days. Ready Heli didn't even exist. Ready Heli, obviously, for those who remember the hobby back in the late 2000s, remembers Ready Heli became the Mikado, this exclusive Mikado distributor slash retailer in the United States. This is before Ready Heli time. So it was hard to find these parts. This pre-model, it's a shop in Florida, had some parts. There were some dealers here and there, but it wasn't easy to find. So I was afraid to fly the logo as my go-to everyday practice machine. So I went and I bought a Raptor 50. And I didn't want to fly the Raptor 50 at the roundabout. So I went to, I used to go to a field called Shader. It's not a field.
Shader.
Shader Road. Shader Road is a road. It's a little strip of, it's like a road. Couple miles behind Graves RC, on the backside of Graves. And it's at the, it ends in a cul-de-sac. And there was plenty of room. There's probably like a 20 to 30 acre field there. And so I would go there, hang by Graves with a few of the guys that used to go there every day and hang at after work. And then we would go to Shader Road and fly. And so I would fly my Raptor 50 there every single day. And with a Raptor 50, I learned, you know, flips and TikToks and got better at auto rotations. I did my first inverted auto at Shader Road with the Raptor 50. And I remember like rolling it and barely landing on top of a semi truck that was parked on the side of the road because I wasn't good at it. I was learning. But yeah, man, it was fun. The good old days, like learning. It was really, really awesome.
Way back
so
when.
I just want to make reference to that because the only way to get good at flying is to fly. It sounds stupid, doesn't it? But it's the only way to get good at it is to fly.
Well, just like anything. Any skill. Yeah.
And to put yourself outside of the comfort zone. And I remember putting myself outside my comfort zone every single day. And then after the Raptor 50, then it went to the Fury 90. My first 90-size helicopter was a Fury, a miniature aircraft. And this is by now 2006, 2005 maybe. And I was a member of Torches, so I would fly my 90-size machine, Nitro, at Torches. But on occasion, we would fly it at a field. Pretty freaking coincident. It's crazy because like how life, you know, comes around, goes around. The field we used to fly, me and my buddy Craig, back in the day, was literally like 10 minutes from where we live today.
Is that Round Lake Road on the backfield there? Yeah. I heard about that.
And Round Lake Road is now like there's a road next to a school. Pretty close to where we live, which we live in the country. For the people that don't know, like we're north of Orlando. We're like 30 to 40 miles north of Orlando in the middle of like the country, like, you know, rural living. But back then I lived in the middle of the city. So for me to come up here, it was like a solid 40, 45 minute drive to go fly there at some random, you know, empty Renegade field.
Right.
But it was cool because like it was just kind of a private field. Like some RCers knew about it. And they used to go on the weekends, but there was nobody there during the week.
Perfect.
So me and my buddy Craig would meet there because Craig lived in the town of Deland, which is another 20 to 30 miles farther away from Orlando, like in the opposite direction. So this Round Lake Road, like Renegade open piece of land, was kind of like in between. It was like a meeting point, like halfway between me and Craig. So we would meet there in the afternoons, and I would bring my Fury 90 and fly every day, and I would burn a gallon a day, 7 to 8 flights.
A gallon
every,
a day?
Yeah, 7 to 8 flights every day.
Whoa.
1 gallon a day.
No
and
way.
That thing taught me, you know, to fly, like, profile, whereas, you know, in the beginning when you're new, everything's tail in or nose in or whatever.
Yeah.
That helicopter taught me how to fly sideways and how to draw lines, parallel lines and things like that. And, like, that's when that took my flying to that next level, right?
Right.
But it was a solid, I would say, year and a half, 2 years from beginning to end of like every day, every single day flying.
Right.
And then it was 1 gallon during the week a day, but then it could have been 2 to 3 gallons on a Saturday and 2 to 3 gallons on a Sunday. Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. It was minimum 2 to 3 cases a week of fuel.
That's crazy.
Minimum for sustained for like 8 to 12 months for close to a year.
That's a long, that's a lot of flights.
Yeah, a lot of flights. And that took me to the level where eventually I felt like Then things got busy. I went through a divorce. Things got really nasty. And like that slowed me down on the flying. But I was at a level where I didn't feel like I had to do that much every day to progress. I was at a point where I was more comfortable and doing better, right? And then, of course, from that point on, everything went to hell.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I started to get more and more involved and it became more of a job. And like then the fun part kind of goes away, as you can tell, a little bit, right?
Just a little bit.
But that's my 30,000-foot view of what my early days were like and how I progressed so quickly. Because I went from zero to something very fast, right? And then I never made it to zero to 100. I made it to, like, 85 or 90, right? Because I, you know, things got busy. Life kept me busy, whatever. But I did most of my progression in a very short period, very quickly. And then I kind of just got stuck there, right?
Right.
That's how I see my my flying days, kind of like in a nutshell.
If you think about it, that was three gallons a week?
Or three cases. Two, 12 cases gallons a week. Yeah, I would say minimum two cases. Minimum eight gallons.
And how many flights is that per week?
56, 58, 60, anywhere between 7 and 8 flights per gallon.
And nowadays you do... five flights a week, if that?
I do that in a year.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. Things are much different now.
Yeah.
You're a lot busier nowadays. Mm-hmm. No free time. But what would you do to prepare? So let's take an example like XFC 2007, where you competed with the miniature aircraft Stratus.
Okay, so now you're fast forwarding a couple of years in time. I was going through my divorce at that time. Mm-hmm. I had just gone through it, actually. So I went through a period where, like, I just didn't have much time to fly. There was a lot going on in my life. Financially, I was having a hard time with the business at the time. And, like, my ex keeping a lot of this. Like, it was just a hard time. I didn't have the financial freedom to go and spend all this money in fuel and do all these things.
Yeah.
I was getting some help at that time, though, with sponsorships. And that's the only thing that kept me going in the hobby. Because financially, I was pretty broke.
Mm-hmm.
But for my first XFC, believe it or not, I prepared less than I would have liked simply because of that. Because I was I had a lot going on in my personal life.
Mm-hmm.
But so 2006, which is my first XFC, is not a good... Or seven. I don't remember. Seven. But my first XFC is not a good... It's not a good representation of what my normal preparation for competition would be. I would say 2008 is the first year when I actually prepared. 2009 is the first year when I actually went through a normal competition routine to prepare for a competition. Because 2007, I was going through a divorce. 2008, the T-Rex 700 Nitro was just coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't totally in tune with it. I was having a hard time. 2009 is the first year when I felt like, okay, I have two reliable models. They're working great. They don't have a problem. You know, I can do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I was never too keen. I was never like too dedicated when it came to competition, like, cuz it just it's annoyed so me to boring. Be so disciplined. Yeah. But I think I started practicing the sets, the known maneuvers, sometime in March. And then I would go to the field every other day and just practice the known maneuvers.
Mm-hmm.
And I would dedicate 2 to 3 flights to nothing but known maneuvers.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2 to 3 flights, I would just screw around and just have fun, right?
Yeah.
And then when it got to about, I would say, late April, somewhere in there, I would start working late April, early May. Then I start getting serious about, like, okay, what am I going to do? I need to look at music. I need to mix music. And then start going to the field with my headset, you know, my earbuds,
mm-hmm.
and start trying to play with music. I was never a simulator guy.
Mm-hmm.
I could never translate simulator into real life. So when I mix music in the sim, which I try to do many times, and then I go to the field, it's like, nah, the sim can do it. But in real life, it's just a totally different pace.
Right.
Doesn't work.
Right.
It's too fast or it just doesn't work. So I would have to remix and remix and then remix. And I think I had my final music mix literally within 2 to 3 weeks of the event. And I got to fly to it 20 to 30 times before actually going to competition with it. So
wow.
I was never like, but that was a different time of my life. Like here's what did it, when I was learning, when I was starting flying, I had an IT business that was extremely successful. I had like 50 people working. It was just totally different situation for me.
Yeah.
I could just walk away, leave my desk at 2 o'clock every afternoon and go fly. And then I would go home, have dinner, and then work, you know, late at night or whatever. But then when I got to, like, when I was in my competition era, it was a different phase of my life. I actually, it wasn't the same. I had more stress. I had, like, to earn a living. Like, it wasn't, mm-hmm. it wasn't as routine, relaxed, you know, every day, go fly, have fun. It was, like, right. more involved, right?
Work for your money. And,
so, yeah. So I didn't have as much time to just go and fly and hang out and have a good time. It was more like it took planning to be able right. to get away to go fly, right?
Right.
So I feel like if I would have had the opportunity that I had in my very early flying days when I was going to competition, I probably would have done much better because I would have been more dedicated, would have been able to be yeah. more dedicated.
Spend right? more time on it, more motivation, all
yeah.
that.
What about you, though?
My competition career started in 2005. The iHobby Expo out in California is when it was out in California. And I would say from 2005 until 2010, competitions for me were just kind of just to gain experience for me because I was never a real strong competitor. I mean, at that time I was 12, 13, 14 years old. I was not going to be able to compete against, you know, you or Bobby or I don't think Jason Krause was competing.
Oh, whatever.
At that time. No, but I was so young. No I was way. Just young. I was not prepared to compete against, you know, Alan Szabo. Who else was there? Dan
did you
Jetson.
Start some drama?
Why?
Yeah, we were at the iHobby Expo, and you started some drama or some drama happened.
I'm gonna get to that. I'm gonna get to
okay,
that.
Okay, yeah, that's yeah. fine. Those yeah. are good days, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. So, so I was young, just dumb kid, didn't really know any better. My dad entered me into it just he was like, "Well, this is gonna be good for you for the future. Teach you how to compete. This, that, and the other. It'll be good if you just get some competitions under your belt." And it was great for me to learn how to do set maneuvers, how to mix music. But up until like 2010, I wasn't preparing. I was learning how to sloppily do known maneuvers. I was throwing routines together. Mark
yeah,
Fadley,
but
Mark
no,
Fadley
but you're
was
fine.
Mixing
you're,
my music.
No, you're fine, solid dude.
Yeah, for at the time it was all right, but I was not going to podium at that time.
No. Neither was I. Actually, I got Rob podium like I think 06 that year.
You could be, yeah.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. So, but who cares? It was fun anyway.
Yeah. But my early competition years when I really started to do better was with the indoor stuff from 2006 until 2009. I was winning, without sounding cocky, I was winning any micro competition that I would enter. And that, what I mean by micro was a 200 size helicopter with 200 millimeter blades.
You mean like 2007?
Between 2006 and 2009, I think I won anything I entered. 2007 to 2009, I guaranteed I won anything I entered.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it might even be until 2012. Anyway, I was flying the Gowie 200 and the T-Rex 450, which had a 325-millimeter blade. And the only reason I did so well with those is because I was flying them all the time. You know, I'd fly them either in the gym at home, in the gymnasium at the school, or in my dad's backyard. So I could log in a weekend 20 flights without thinking about it because they're small. They fly in the backyard, didn't have to go to the field or anything like that. So that was my advantage when it came to the micros. But as far as big stuff, I didn't really start flying those competitively well until probably 2012 or 13 when I was able to get out to the field more. But to jump back to the story you're talking about, iHobby Expo 2007, I think it was.
No, 6.
6? Could have been 6.
Well, now you got me confused.
It was. I think it would have been 7. And we were in Chicago, was it? Chicago, Illinois. iHobby Expo. You were flying your T-Rex 450, and there was a safety line that you were not supposed to fly behind, and I thought that you flew behind it. I'm not going to mention who I mentioned this comment to, because it'll upset
him. No, come on.
Okay, so...
You're an old man now. It's all good. He's not going to care.
It'll be fine.
But I remember that, because I just thought of it for some freaking odd reason. Like, that's so long ago, though.
So...
Jesus.
It was myself...
Like 7? So 12 years ago.
2007. It was myself and Matt Botos. At the time, I had just barely turned 12 years old, so I'm basically a kid at that point. 2012? Yeah, I would have been 12 years old. So Matt and I are watching you fly. I thought that you had flown behind the safety line, so I went to Matt. I made a comment like, did he just fly behind the safety line? That's all I said. Did Bert fly behind the safety line? And Matt went off on me. He's like, you cannot make those comments to anybody whatsoever. If you make that to the wrong person, Bert will be disqualified. You need to be careful what you say around people. And then it got back to you, and you came up, and you're like, so I heard you were talking some trash about me. And I'm 12 years old, terrified. I'm like, no,
no, I don't think I told you that. I think I told to your dad.
It could have been.
I think I told Ray. But I said, you need to keep calm under control or something. I was terrified. But you were like, dude, you, well, do the math. 2007.
I would have been
19. You're 23.
Yeah.
Going to 24. You were 11. You were 11.
11, yeah.
Yeah, 11.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So back then I learned just don't say anything ever. Just keep your mouth shut. Yeah.
That's funny shit.
Yeah. But, yeah, back.
But I mean, I could have passed the line. I don't know. I don't think I did, but.
I don't know what happened. But that's all. Because
there was part of my routine where I was like inverted backwards, like really close to the line. I don't know.
But from what I remember, all I did was just make the passing comment to Botos. I don't remember telling anyone else, but. I ended up
like fourth that year. I think I should have done better, but whatever.
Yeah, but from that point
forward. Did you win that year?
I think I started winning in 2007, the year after that. 2008?
What was that? That had to be.
I think it was closer to 2006.
Who won that year? Zabel?
Zabel or Nick or something. I don't know. But
no, Nick wasn't winning shit then. Nick was a hack. That's a story that nobody knows. Like, respect Nick because you're awesome, but. Man, Nick, I met Nick in XFC 2006 or 5, and he was flying a T-Rex because he was part of Team Align in the early days.
Yeah.
And he was solid pilot, man. Like, he flew really well. Like, he was on these perfect-looking funnels and all this, like, old-school flying, right? But really done, really good. And he finished second to last because his shit used to just fail. Like,
just fall out of the air.
Yeah, right? Yeah, he was a hack.
Which is funny because he's like the most anal guy I know.
Oh, yeah, he is now. Yeah. Tim Scannard taught him a lot about wrenching. Yeah. Absolutely. He'll tell you to your face. He learned a lot from Tim.
Yeah.
And I mean, look at him now. But it's funny, man, how like things change with the years. No way.
But after that, I don't know, somewhere in the 2011, 2012, I started picking up into the big competitions like XFC, where I would compete with like a T-Rex 700, and absolutely would not be where I am today without my dad. He did all the wrenching. He did all the traveling with me. He fixed my stuff when I crashed. He charged my batteries. I absolutely would not be here without my dad. I just definitely had to mention that on the off chance that he plays this episode. But just kind of learn throughout the years by watching everyone else, watching Kyle Dahl and Jamie and yourself, and getting tips from Bert and from Bobby about how to put routines together, how to spice it up with the music, watching people like Kyle Dahl, who's really good at set maneuvers, watching Kyle Dahl learn how to do set maneuvers and, you know, try and piece together a flight. And I think I finally started to kind of get the hang of it by 2014, 2015, about how to put together a routine, how to prepare and how to practice. It took me a while, but
I think it took that long.
I think I finally figured it out around that time.
How were you doing back in, you know, 2007, 9, 10, 11, 12, like the years that I was in competition?
Mixing music like a month before, flying to it 4 or 5 times before showing up, and just kind of going and just winging it. Like, my dad and I would work on set maneuvers for a while, because he and I both felt that was pretty important. So we would practice together on set maneuvers, or no maneuvers, I guess they were called at the time, just to kind of learn how to do those. But as far as, like, practicing the right way, I never really learned how to do that until 2014, 2015, with XFC and Global 3D and 3D Cup and all that.
Yeah.
Took me a while. But nowadays, I have a pretty decent practice schedule to kind of put things into perspective. Like, for known maneuvers, back when I was living at home in 2014, 2015, my dad would go to the field with me. He would stand about 15 to 20 feet behind me, and he would judge the set maneuvers as if he was a judge on the flight line. So he would make sure everything was centered, make sure, you know, I didn't go too far left, too far right. If it was a pirouetting maneuver, make sure the pirouette rate was consistent. He would just kind of look at it as a judge and make sure that, first and foremost, it was done correctly, and second, that it was done clean and precise and all that. And then he would just kind of watch the music routines, see if I did one maneuver too repetitively, like, you know, did something for too long, and this, that, and the other. But I don't know. These days, nice. I try and prepare much earlier in advance. Start working on music in January.
So what do you... No, seriously, like, joking aside, what do you do now for preparation? There's no way January.
I've been working on music since January.
No, come on.
As far as finding songs, Because I listen to a lot of music all the time.
Well, listening and getting ideas and things like that. But, like, in this... actual true preparation? When do you start preparing?
I'm mixing music as we speak. I have files on my computer at home of music mixes thrown together, intros and outros, transitions, stuff like that, that'll all get pieced together within the next week or so to have kind of a nice little rough draft to start practicing for Global 3D. And then on top of that, I have my list of no maneuvers that I'm beginning to work on for Global 3D. So start piecing those together. And with that, you get to pick which order you do them in. So I have to figure out how they flow together as best as possible, figure out if I need different RPMs for them. And then I get to rely on you, Mr. Bert Kammerer, to help me center them. To help me center them, do them correctly, do them cleanly.
Global 3D.
And then you get to go there with me to help me compete.
Am I going to Global 3D?
You have to. You have to. I need your help.
We'll figure that out. So, I think that was kind of fun sharing all those stories.
Yeah, the good old days.
But, okay, give me an example of, for the listener that is curious, a classic example. The first year that you won the one competition.
2014.
Okay. How did you prepare for that?
That's a weird competition. That's all special effects, really.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. That one, so for those of you that don't know the one competition.
Well, aside from Bobby Watts being instrumental.
Yes.
To.
Yes. Outside of the special effect, which was the parachute drop that year, I put together effectively a 6-minute flying routine because you could fly for 7 minutes and I think about 1 minute was for the parachute. So 6 minutes of actual flying where I picked music to try and keep it exciting yet technical. So I just kind of looked at it from, it's really hard to explain, but throughout the whole year, I'm always finding songs and saving songs that I think would be good for flying. And then you kind of know the beat in your head of what each maneuver that you want to do sounds like, so to speak. So just pick songs, mix them together in the program on my computer, and just trying to put together a routine of, you know, the maneuvers that I do a lot, you know, different pirouetting maneuvers, rolling maneuvers, keep it technical and exciting. It's it's really hard to explain without knowing how to do it. But
like, when do you start getting really serious about, like, going and flying every day?
If the competition's in August, I start getting real serious mid-June. Flying every single day, 10 to 15
flights a day. What about Global 3D this year?
Global 3D this year is going to be a bit different because in 2015, 2016, Kyle Stacey had no job. So if Kyle Stacey wanted to go out to the field and fly all day long, Kyle Stacey did that. But now Kyle Stacey has a responsibility, which is a job. And even though you're very gracious and give me some time to go fly, I still have responsibilities to take care of. So
Can go every day. You can still go every
I can
day.
Still go every day.
And I told you, like, because away. Florida sucks weather-wise sometimes. We're still okay, but you know how it starts to get, like, nasty real and muggy bad. And, like, rain? Like, if you want to go in the morning, go in the morning. You just got to, I do agree, you have to make some sacrifices, like, schedule-wise. Like, you would have to get up. Well, you get up early enough. Like, you could be at the fleet field, like, 7:30 and be done by 9:30, 10 o'clock and come to work late.
Right.
Or you can come to work and leave at 4 or 5 and go fly till 7.
Right.
But you still can put in an hour and a half, 2 hours a day.
Right. And, like, lately, like, you for the past couple of days, you and I have been going to the field at the end of the workday, around 5 or 6, we head to the field. And I go to the field with 4 charge packs. If I go to the field with charge packs...
And, well, I was going to say that. Yeah. You need to almost contact OptiPower and be like, listen, I need 5 more sets.
Right.
Because you should have... You should spend the night at home when you're just... screwing around, chilling, watching TV, doing whatever, charging packs.
Right.
And then when you go to the field, you should go with like 9-10 packs ready to go so you don't have to charge.
Yep.
You just fly. Like, wait literally 3 to 5 minutes to cool off, fly, go home, done.
Yep.
Right?
That's the plan because back in the day, I could charge and waste some time, fly an airplane, yada, yada. I don't have all that.
But that's not anymore. Productive either.
It's not.
Yeah. Especially when you're by yourself. Because like if it's a casual day at the field with other people, like you can... you know, have your time in between flights and hang out and chill and shoot the shit and have fun. But like when you go there and you're by yourself just trying to practice or trying to like accomplish something, you really don't want to like sit in between flights for too long. Like why would you? Why would you? There's nothing to do.
Yeah.
You're bored.
You're just bored. Yeah. It gets stale. So
And I don't think that 9 flights, that's too many. I think 5, maybe 6 flights back-to-back a
it
day?
All depends on the person, and what I try and do is do the most amount of flights before I get burnt out. Because as soon as you get burnt out, all the practice you've done goes away.
Yeah.
Because your brain's fried, Your fingers are fried, and no matter how many flights you do after that point, it's just wasted time and possibly just a crash waiting to happen. I've been time where I'm like, oh, I'm done flying, but let's put out three more flights. And then right as soon as I do that, the quality goes down and I start crashing.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, it's just a waste of time at that point.
Anyway. All right, we have to wrap it up. Jesus, let's do it. Over an hour.
Whoa.
Let's do it.
Done.
Let's do it. Done. Yeah. Huh?
How do we wrap it up again?
So we say, this is how you can contact me, blah, 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 and you pretend that you give a shit.
Go ahead.
We really love you guys. If not, we wouldn't be doing this for
right,
sure.
Right.
This is fun. All right. Thank you for listening. Support us. Instagram,
mm-hmm.
The BK Official.
Mm-hmm.
Just go out there and just follow us, please.
Yeah,
we suck. We have no followers. Yeah.
Or
SAB Goblin. SAB Goblin USA or Goblin Official?
SAB Official SAB USA?
Official SAB USA.
If you type in SAB USA, you'll find it.
Yeah, you'll find SAB USA. Or on Facebook is SAB Goblin USA or mm-hmm. The BK Official,
mm-hmm.
or I can be reached at facebook.com/BurtRC or Instagram's Burt_Kammerer.
Mm-hmm. And my Facebook is facebook.com/KyleStaceyRC. However, I cannot be reached there for messages because it's destroyed. So if you want to contact me directly, it's KyleStaceyRC@gmail.com.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Send us your questions, suggestions, ideas.
Yep.
We read your messages. We try to reply to all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Might take a couple days, but we do reply.
Mm-hmm.
We've got some suggestions, some ideas. Once this craziness with the Kraken goes away, we'll resume normal schedule with, you know, more diverse
yeah.
episode ideas and so forth. But
right.
For the time being, thanks for dealing with us and listening to our rant about the Kraken every week and our rant episodes. And hope you listen to us again next week.
Thanks, guys.
See ya.